So we all know what it is when a child says why. It is either the why of inquiry or the why of defiance. It's either, why is it that the sky's blue, or why do I have to do this? And why do I have to do this doesn't only apply to children. Why do I have to do this is a universal cry of children and adults and Jews. There are a lot of laws in our tradition. And if you ask yourself, why do I have to do this? Well, for some of them, there are reasons. One of our scholars calls those casuistic laws. You should do this for this reason and that reason. But others are what he calls apodictic. That is, you should do this because I said so. Parents know from casuistic and apodictic laws too, only they don't use that language. And as the kid asks why more, the language changes. But if you ask, okay, we understand in theory, but really in practice, shouldn't you have to agree to any system of laws? The rabbis go in all different directions. First of all, they explain or hypothesize, or tell the story that everybody who was born Jewish and everybody who chooses Judaism for all of history was actually already standing at Sinai. Now, you might not remember, but there's no reason that God should be held accountable for your faulty memory. You were there. That's what the rabbis tell us. And therefore, you're obligated because at Sinai, we said, Na'aseh v'nishma, we'll do whatever it is you tell us, now tell us what it is. But you're going to say to me, well, that doesn't sound like me. I can't imagine myself, even thousands of years ago, saying, go ahead, God, whatever you say is fine. Now tell me what it is. We like to know the terms of the contract. And so the rabbis, recognizing that there's a certain element of implausibility in the idea that we said, give us whatever and we'll do it, came up with another story that is almost the exact opposite of that one, which is that God picked up the mountain of Sinai and held it above the Israelites and said, do you want the Torah or shall I drop the mountain? And we, in our infinite wisdom, said, Torah, please. And therefore, because you were there and made that decision, you're obligated till today. That is the classical story of why you are obligated to the laws that were given at Sinai thousands of years ago. But of course, they were given once at Sinai. And what is once? What does it mean to do something or to agree to something only once? There's an aging ingenue in one of Sondheim's songs that says, I never do anything twice. But she's talking about a very different sort of thing from accepting the laws of the Torah. And really, for most experiences of life, the German proverb holds true, which is, einmal ist keinmal, once is nothing. If you really want to understand something, agree to something, absorb something, you have to do it again. Nabokov said there's no such thing as reading, only rereading. The first time you read a book, you don't actually see how it's done because you're following the plot. In order to understand the artistry of the author, the seams of the plot, the engine of the novel, you have to reread so that you can pay attention. Now, you can't really pay attention when a mountain is being held over your head. And so, in some ways, being at Sinai once is like not being there at all. 25 years ago, a little bit less, Judith Plaskow, a feminist theologian, wrote a book called Standing Again at Sinai. And the idea and the title led me to think, what if we got to stand there again? What if we understood that there are things that were said at Sinai that sounded different to us standing there again than they did 2,000 years ago because a lot has happened in the intervening time? What if we could stand again at Sinai? There is one mystical teaching that the first thing that was revealed at Sinai was the first letter of the Ten Commandments. What is the first letter of the Ten Commandments? There it is. An aleph. And what sound does an aleph make? You're all correct. Both those of you who said none and those of you who were silent. Now think about the silences that have happened in our history between that time and this time that we can hear, but they could not have heard thousands of years ago because there hadn't been those silences yet. Both the silences of meaning and power and revelation and understanding and the silences of despair and exclusion and oppression and sadness. All of those silences are part of our inheritance when we stand again at Sinai because we are able to hear them since we get to stand there again. When we first stood at Sinai, it was a tribal age. And the world was divided and didn't understand in some deep way that human beings were essentially the same. And the message that God is the God of all of humanity fell to some extent on deaf ears. People knew in theory that other tribe was of the same species, but in practice, they didn't really believe that. Well, now we stand again at Sinai. And we talk about God being the God of the entire world, and we really understand it. Because now we have enough experience of enough people in enough lands and enough climes and enough different cultures to recognize that even though there are innumerable differences between human beings, we are at bottom all the same. Standing again at Sinai for Plaskow, when she wrote it, was really about the inclusion of women who stood back from the mountain in the biblical account. But when we stand again at Sinai, we will stand as we sit at Sinai, that is, women and men together. Because we hear the directive differently. Because we understand that once is nothing. And that revelation wasn't an end, it was a beginning. The first word, not the fixed word, that you have to unspool throughout the generations in order to understand. That's why again and again and again, what we end up quoting when we quote the Jewish tradition is not just what was given at Sinai, but all the interpretations and ideas that came after it. Why do we pair Isaiah in the Haftarah with the Ten Commandments? Because Isaiah's message brought out the universalism of the Torah, but it took time for that to develop and time for it to be understood. And he had to stand again. We are heirs of a different kind of Judaism. From the Judaism that was understood for a long time and is still practiced in the world, a Judaism that believes that nothing new can be said. That was new. We are Jews that believe in a dialogue as well as a decalogue, in the sense that there is an ongoing conversation between the Jewish people and God that doesn't have a fixed point of ending beyond which you cannot go. When you look around you, you see how many changes were made in order to preserve what was given. Because the only way to keep things the same is to change them. If you don't change them, they die. And so wider and wider and wider circles are drawn around the mountain each year as we stand again at Sinai. And we want it to be that way. Because we don't think that our children should believe only what we believe. Or that our grandchildren should believe only what we believe. We don't want in advance to put borders around their imagination and blockades on their curiosity. We want them to stand again too, and they will discover things that we could not have imagined as we have discovered things that our ancestors could not have imagined. Who would think that there would be a place like this? Unimaginable to earlier generations. And who knows what will follow us? The fundamental idea of the revelation at Sinai was the end of hiding. You realize that if God reveals, that means that up to that moment, God was hiding. And then all of a sudden, there came a moment in history when human beings and God met. And the explosion of our tradition came from that meeting. But it is far from exhausted. And so, in each generation, we stand again and discover anew and find things that before we had not imagined. Every covenant has two sides. And our covenant with God is twofold. There is a covenant of history, everything that we have endured together, but also a covenant of destiny. That's the one that we get to shape. But we shape it with the echoes of everything that we have experienced to this moment. So don't be uncomfortable, and don't be defensive, and don't be equivocating about the Judaism that is yours. Recognize what depth of commitment and knowledge and passion it takes to love something and still be willing to change it. To see voices, such as the voices of women that have not been heard, and to gather together on a Shabbat morning to celebrate and hear the voice of a young woman. That's what it means to stand again at Sinai. Throughout our history, even though we did not articulate it this way, our people stood there again and again and again, changing what it is they received and handing on something new. We do the same. We stand here again on this morning when we read the Aseret HaDivarim. And remember, in Hebrew, they're not called the Ten Commandments. They're called the Ten Sayings, Divarim. Unlike commandments, Divarim go on and on and on and on, and every saying invites conversation, and every conversation invites change. And every change invites argument. Changing, talking, and arguing. As I recall, that's what you were doing the last time I saw you at Sinai. Shabbat Shalom.